you could only be tuned to WRUV FM Burlington 90.1 on your radio dial.
WRUV FM Burlington.
The radio voice of the University of Vermont, your better alternative.
You are listening to 90.1 WRUV FM Burlington. Thanks, as always, for listening.
82% of young drivers ages 16 to 24 have read a text message while driving. Everyone knows that texting and driving is dangerous, but many of us do it anyway. When you text and drive, you're not multitasking, you're driving blind. By taking your eyes off the road, even for a few seconds, you make the road less safe for you, your passengers, and other drivers. Stop the texts, stop the wrecks. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council and WRUV FM Burlington, where DJs never text and drive.
Also known as DJ Logue from WRUV's Exposure Series. This is the first interview and episode of my show, Logging On with DJ Logue, brought to you by 90.1 WRUV FM Burlington. Today I'm joined with Joe P., the alt-rock singer-songwriter extraordinaire, hailing from good old New Jersey. He is currently on his fall 2024 tour off the back of his August 2024 debut album, Garden State Vampire, his biggest headline tour to date with 29 dates. He will be here in Burlington, Vermont, December 3rd at Higher Ground, so go get your tickets, highergroundmusic.com, and we will be doing a giveaway for two tickets on DJ B's show, The Charm, November 18th at 5 p.m. EST, so stay tuned for that. Without a further ado, we are on the phone with him. Joe P, everyone, what's up? How are you doing?
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. Dude, you're always on the road right now. Is there any fight in the car on tour, but has it been pretty peaceful?
So I'm lucky because I was on tour with everyone, and you know, there's always a little fighting, but I kind of stay out of it. I'm pretty good. I feel like I'm the responsible dad of the tour as far as the personalities go. Like, I'm like, all right, like, let's not stay out too late. You know, I'm not going to drink too much tequila this night because tomorrow we have to go 12 hours or whatever. But now I'm actually fully alone in a rental car in a Dodge Charger. I kind of feel like an undercover cop, just driving around doing radio promo. So this is the most peaceful part of the tour, is when it's just me alone.
Hey, I'm glad. I'm glad that you're doing your thing and having fun.
Hell yeah.
All right. So to kick things off, obviously you're from New Jersey. The debut album is called Garden State Vampire. You covered Springsteen on your French Blonde EP.
Yeah.
I'm from the Tri-State area myself. I'm from New York. I have grandparents that live in Jersey. I feel very connected to my local music scene, and I imagine you are as well. Yes. How is being a New Jersey native shaped your music or how you consume your live music scene, and has there been a particular moment that has felt really sentimental to you?
I think being from New Jersey or anywhere in that kind of world, it immediately humbles you in the sense of that you are really close to the popular kids table in the lunchroom. Like, you're right there and you can like see all the cool stuff they're talking about and what they're eating and wearing, and you're like, man, but you're still kind of at the weird kid table. And you wish you could be at that table. And one day, though, I think it clicks in the sense of that you're actually kind of stoked to be from the weird kid table. And I have realized that, oh no, this is great. I'm going to double down on this. Anyone can eventually be in the popular kids table. You just got to be there. But actually what's cooler is being from the kind of weird underground, kind of ugly duckling, ugly stepchild table. I think that's the cooler thing. And I think the moment that it clicked, I think it's just going on tour. I think when you go on tour and you travel the country or Europe or whatever it is, you come back, and that's when you can appreciate where you're from, I think. You have to leave. You just have to leave. And you either appreciate it or you end up realizing why you don't like it or whatever. But for me, it was always, I wish I was in New York. I wish I was in LA. I wish I was in Nashville, because that's where everyone else was.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slowly has turned into like, oh, I'm so stoked to get to go back to the secret bat cave of New Jersey and be like the only fish in my pond. Like, it's just kind of better that way for my brain, I think, for creative purposes. Where if I was in LA, or if I was in Nashville or New York, even for that matter, I think I would just feel kind of overwhelmed. Like, you know, how am I going to do anything special? There's so many special people already here. So I kind of have to put blinders on for myself, and New Jersey makes that pretty easy.
I agree. I think if you don't have that local connection, or you don't have the local hearts enjoying your music, you don't know how, you don't have what you're doing now, obviously.
Yes.
Speaking of that, so I remember, this is a really awesome interview today, because I remember seeing the Fight in the Car TikTok in like 2021 around like 3,000 likes. So yeah. I've been like with you since the beginning, man.
Wow.
I know. So I know that you've been making these videos since 2020. How's it kind of felt to gain that mainstream recognition over the last few years? Have you felt kind of pressure to cater to that larger TikTok audience, or have you kind of created your own community?
I think like, the TikTok thing for me is always, I think I've learned that it's a tool best used as a stepping stone to get people to come out to the live show. Where totally. I think a lot of people have found a way to use TikTok in a way where it's like they can exist in that TikTok universe and like build something within it. for me, I think I'll always just try to use it as a way to get people to want to go to the real thing or go listen to the real album on Spotify or whatever, rather than like double down on trying to like build something within it. Because I think it's okay to do that. I think I'm envious of people that can do that, but I easily get kind of lost in that and in the comments and, oh, everyone wants this thing, so I got to give them this thing. It's like, just like, it's like anything else. It's just a tool to get people to the real pure version of your art. You know what I mean? I don't think you should cater mm-hmm. your art to the kind of like, you know, medium. Rather try to make the medium work for you and use it totally. As a way to make people go, oh, this is different. And that's the other thing. It only works that way anyway, as far as getting anything worthwhile out of it involves making people go, oh, this is different. I've never seen something like this before. Where now I think in that 2021 era of TikTok, it was a lot of like every video was like super unique in a lot of ways. And now it seems more like we're beyond trends. It's more just like
formula.
You know, there's so much formula to like POV. You just came across your favorite band that sounds like The Killers and you know, Smashing Pumpkins. And it's like, it's cool, but you immediately have seen something before you get a chance to like make it what it is. So I try to just put clips of like, here's me playing the song, because to me that's the safest way to stay authentic without because of that, you kind of suffer in the sense of like you're not doing the POV like clickbait thing, so you get pushed out of the algorithm a lot of times, but when it does click, at least it's going a longer way. Like I'd rather have 3,000 likes on a video of me playing in the car in the snow in my backyard rather than 30 million on like a video of me like with a rope being pulled by a car, and like it's cool and I thought like, oh, that's sick, like 30 million likes, this is crazy, but it doesn't really matter because it's like, I don't know, it's not promoting the right thing. It's promoting like a viral video. It's not promoting like music or the art or anything as much
longevity.
It's promoting a popular thing rather than like, you know, I'd rather 3,000 more solidified, you know, people with attention on something that I want them to have attention on. I'd rather have them stick around than like, you know, 30 million people like something for the wrong reason, or, you know, it's just like a trend.
Totally. Onto that, like, I know that TikTok is such a great way to like have DIY artists get their flowers, and we have a huge DIY scene here in Vermont, in Burlington. When did you start making music? Was this kind of like a COVID lockdown sort of thing where it was like, I'm going to post these covers and original music online, or were you already working towards this?
I was always working towards it, in like a band that I was kind of in since I was in middle school, essentially. But COVID was like for a lot of bands and a lot of people doing anything, even non-music related, it was the end of a lot of those eras. So it was you know, if you're in a group, project, that is, especially because it's like, you know, now there's nothing there to distract you. There's nothing there to like, you know, if you don't love this and are obsessed with it, it's very apparent, and there's nothing there to kind of like cushion the blow of anything. Like, so with the band, it felt kind of like it exposed everything for what it really was, where it was like, okay, maybe we're all not equally as into this as we thought, or maybe this was a wake-up call for some people as far as like they want to do something else in life or whatever, you know. It was like a big reset button for a lot of people. And for me, I was like, cool, let's just keep going. So for me, it was like, this is a better excuse to be a freak in my basement and like keep working on music. This is great. But when the band ended, I was like, okay, this is a reset button for me, but only in the sense of like, I need to start over doing the same thing I was already doing as far as like music and stuff like that. So it does feel like it started on, you know, in March of 2020 or 2021 or whatever. Like it feels like that is when I started doing everything that I'm doing leading up until now. But, you know, I played a bunch of shows before COVID too, where it was just the bartender and like six people, you know, the DIY thing. I've done all that.
That's so cool. And it clearly worked out for you because 29 tour dates, no joke. Like,
oh my God. I didn't even realize it was that many.
Garden State Vampire Fall 2024 tour. How has this headline tour been different from so many previous headline tours and opening slots for people like Spacey Jane and all that stuff, now that it's off of this major album project? And what's been your favorite memorable tour moment?
I think the coolest thing is when you play somewhere where you opened for someone. So, like, Bowery Ballroom, we opened for Spacey Jane in New York City. And then that was the last show we did on the leg of, you know, the most recent leg of the tour. And it was, like, sold out, like, 600-something people. So it was crazy because it was like, oh, this is cool. It was a cool full circle type moment. And, like, this is what we've been working towards and all that good stuff. But, yeah, so I think Bowery Ballroom has to be the highlight as far as, like, you know, you go around the whole country and that's where we ended, basically, the kind of, like, leg of that tour. And it's like, wow, there's, you know, this is sold out. There's tons of people. It's New York on, like, a Monday night, whatever. You know, it was a really cool kind of, like, all right, we're doing it right. This is the right, you know, we've hit a good, you know, peak here as far as, like, playing these clubs and stuff and trying to gather a snowball, a cumulative audience by getting out there and really playing and doing the, like, anti-TikTok side of it, you know, the other side of it, where it's like, let's really go out there. Because playing for 500 people in a room goes a longer way than, you know, like I said, the 30 million kind of, like,
invisible, know,
like,
yeah,
it's a, like, yeah, and people might love it, go, I love this song, wow, I can't wait to whatever, it's cool, but they are scrolling, like, they just saw a video of a dog, like, doing a funny backflip, and then they saw, like, a sad thing, and, like, then they saw my video, and then they scrolled on something else, so it's like, no matter how much they love that clip of me playing the song that they clicked on, it's still not as concrete of a connection as, like, literally 50 people in a bar watching me play a song on an acoustic guitar. So, you know, you do have to do both sides of it and play the game, but I like that, you know, we've built up some type of a touring community and, like, a fan base that will actually leave their house and, like, pay to see a show for an hour and a half. And, you know, that's so meaningful.
Totally. That's so beautiful, man. I love that venue. Bowery Ballroom. Awesome.
Yeah.
As a New Yorker, totally. I know that Burlington's gonna bring the heat though, so you better be prepared. That might be your favorite show. I don't know.
Oh, really? What are Burlington shows like? Are they good?
We're pretty crazy. I was at High Ground a couple weekends ago. We saw Machine Girl there and it was like insane. Wow. So you better be ready.
Okay, good.
Yeah. do you have any like musts on tour? Like any pre-show, post-show rituals? And once you're back at home, what's gonna be your first stop in Jersey?
I think my pre-show ritual usually for me, I don't really like drink or anything before we play. Everyone in the band loves to do like a shot of tequila before we play. And it's cool for them and I get it. But the problem is I have to sing. And when you take a shot and immediately go do any type of physical activity, your throat and everything is like, okay, let's burp. So I'm the first two songs, I've been like, man, I got to burp, and it really throws me off. So I've been, like, trying to bypass the shot, but it's also, like, you don't want to mess with the camaraderie. So I find myself still doing that. But usually what happens is I like to do something really random as far as, like, I'll usually, like, clean the Sprinter van a lot. I don't know what it is. I'll go to the van that's, like, usually parked in the back of the venue, and I'm back there with, like, just organizing all of, like, the garbage and, like, cleaning it out and, like, finding, like, jackets that I've, you know, like, okay, and, like, I don't know what it is. I think and it's a recent thing that I started doing, and I think it's, like, there's something therapeutic and, like, calming about, like, controlling something for the last second until you're about to go out and wrestle, like, a beast that you don't know what it's going to be like. So I think I like doing something like that where it's, like, super calming, or, like, I go on TikTok and watch dog videos. I'm obsessed with like watching any type of a dog do anything, because again, it's like this calming thing and it's so opposite of what I'm about to do that I think I just need to like offset it as much as I can right before I play. So I'm not much of a like go crazy, you know, drink, go nuts and like get wild to try to match the energy on the stage. I kind of want to like be as far removed and save as much of that part of me until the moment I walk out, and then it's like I can react and be like, whoa, I was just ice cold and now I have to get warm. And I like warming up, you know, not in a way that it's a bad thing for the first couple songs, but in a way that it's like, I get to like decide what, you know, I get to match the audience the most accurate way possible because I'm reacting to them rather than you know, coming out thinking like everyone's going crazy, like we're all at the same energy level. It's like, maybe not. Maybe you have to find a way to like ease them upwards into that. And I just like to be ready to like go out and feel that immediately and react to it.
Totally. That's awesome.
And when I go home, I will go to Serpico's Pizza in Allenhurst.
Gotta have a slice. There you go. Yeah. I feel like that's like a one-man band type of thing where you're like cleaning out the garbage, you're roadieing up, like you're doing everything.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff happening all at once. But it's like, I would like to have it another way with more people doing whatever, and I've tried doing stuff where it's like, oh, we'll let this guy drive, we'll let this guy do this, whatever. And like, it's cool, but it ends up being kind of like more work in the end. Like I've tried like expanding it and letting more cooks in the kitchen, but what happens is, yeah, like it just gets further away from what I want. And I'm like, all right, I'd rather just deal with the work part of it and be overworked, but have it the way it should be and has to be until we can find the right person or right team of people that can really like, they're just a second version of me of like, as far as like, they already know what I'm thinking ahead of time, you know, like that. That's what it takes. Cause I don't know. I'm too crazy as far as like, I have a definite way that I want to do this and do that. And it's easier to just kind of do it yourself as long as possible. And I come from that DIY local show, you know, playing in basements in Rutgers, like that world that I'm like, all right, I'm fine with doing that. It's totally cool. Like right now, I'm literally driving a car to the next radio thing where it's like most artists I know would be like, wait, you're not with like at least one person who's like doing the driving or like being the buffer when it's time to leave or like calling the people ahead of time, you know? And I'm like, no, because I'd rather be alone and like use the skills that I have to do that DIY mentality to get it done the way I'd want it done rather than be like, well, yeah, someone's doing the driving, but like, you know, now it's weird because I'm like, how do I tell them I want to stop to like get food? Like, I don't really know them that well. And yeah, it's just weird stuff comes from expanding your team. So I've been doing it very, very slowly and kind of carefully.
Hey, that just shows that you're the real deal, man. but onto the inspirations of everything that's going on. You have such a distinct sound, and over time, it's just so awesome to see your sound progression from the EPs till now, and you can still hear a lot of your influences. Who are your influences for your live performance, or just influences in general for this album? Are there any unexpected ones?
Influences for my live performance is always, I'm always trying to kind of make it feel like it could fall apart at any moment. I never want it to be too slick. Like I want it to be, you know, well-oiled and feel good as far as, like, you know, no awkward moments or anything like that. But I always wanted to feel like you're getting an experience that can only happen in the room that you're standing in that particular moment. And I've seen that in very few live acts. Like, I feel like everything I've seen has been so based on, like, let's make it perfect so that there's no mistakes and then people will like the show better. But I don't know. I don't think that's right. I think you want it to feel like it could come off the rails and because then people feel like they're part of the show rather than just watching your show and then you leave and then you go do it in another city the next night. So, yeah, I really love, obviously, Springsteen has always been the top-tier live show since the day he started. And even still, like, you know, it took me forever to even get into Bruce, but I finally went and saw him, like, you know, 2 years ago or whatever it was, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy that this 70-year-old man with no light show, no fancy tricks, and for 4.5 hours or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome, yeah.
It's insane. I was like, there's something there, and I walk away from it. I don't know why it was great, but the only thing I do know is that it'll never happen again. So I'm always trying to create a thing that you feel like you walk away like, man, like that show, there's no way they're doing that same show tomorrow because there's no way you can plan any of that stuff that perfectly down to to a T. Like maybe the stupid little joke in between song 3 and song 4 was similar, but you know, when the string broke and Joe tripped into his amp and like now he's bleeding, there's no way he can do that every night. Like, so I'm trying to create those opportunities by doing that. I love Jeff Buckley as far as, yeah, feels like you know where he's going when he's singing, you know, all that stuff he's doing. And my favorite kind of like band mentality thing is the band Idols. And it's, I think, because it's just like, it's such a heavier influence and really, really is all, you know, more punk based and heavier. But like, I think it's really cool because they have that thing where it feels like this is going to explode and I can't look away because it might, the whole thing might break and I can't wait to see when it breaks because I'll get to see that, you know, and, they really just kill it. And it feels like they're just making it up as they go while still being extremely rehearsed, if that makes sense.
Totally. I saw them at Forest Hill Stadium a couple summers ago for their Reset Fest, and they're awesome. And I feel like that's totally in your alley. You're trying to have fun in the moment. From what I've seen of your shows, I can't wait to see it at Higher Ground. Very similar to those basement show, just like, but with a way bigger audience and having that intimate moment. I think that's awesome.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I think when I was like listening to the album, some of the influences that I got out of it was like, tracks like She Got Me, I saw a lot of LCD Sound System. Yeah, I felt that. Yeah. Lily, I felt like it was kind of like a modernized Simon and Garfunkel type of sound.
Oh, cool,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and then MGMT for Everybody's Different. I feel like what an opener.
Yeah.
It really encapsulated the world of the album, and it was awesome. You're currently promoting the new single, which is Violet, off the album. Could you describe that track to me? How did that start? How did that come about?
Yeah, that one was a really cool recording and writing session because I did it in L.A. And it was one of the first times I'd ever done like a co-writing session where you show up and like, you know, you're going to work with a stranger and bare your soul to them. It's really weird because I'm usually just alone in my basement doing it. So it was cool because it was three people, including myself, and we just... we're in the studio, and there was a drum thing going, and we kind of, like, wrote it as we recorded it. And it was this cool, because when you jam with multiple musicians, you can't do that by yourself. Like, there's only so much you can do by stacking, like, all right, I'll do the bass, I'll do the drums, I'll do the guitar now. It's really cool, but when you do it simultaneously, there's a weird, like, melding that can only happen when there's three different minds kind of simultaneously coexisting, trying to better the song in real time. Like, it's such a unique thing that you really can't make some type of synthetic version of when you're by yourself using any type of like computerized system. There's moments where you get pockets of that, but it's like for a split second, where with a band and like in a group setting, you can go on like a 2-hour run where no one looks at each other, no one talks to each other, and you just look up at the end and you're like, we gotta listen to that back, because there's like, there was a moment where you did this thing on the drums and the person's like, what did I do? I didn't even know I did that. And it's so cool. And that song was one of the few that really had that opportunity to play a song. Because I'm not thinking about the drums and I'm not thinking about the... even the guitar was played by someone else on that song, which, like, I never thought I would have a song that wasn't me playing all the guitars. But I think because of that, it was, like, a unique guitar part that I wouldn't have made myself. And, you know, I did the bass on it after and stuff like that, and kind of took it home and listened to it over and over again and just wrote lyrics over the melodies that I mumbled into the mic in real time. But it's cool because if, like, you soloed the drums, you would hear, like, the guitar because they were recorded simultaneously. And there's just not a lot of things like that made anymore because you don't have to do that. You can do it so isolated. But yeah, that song came from that, and the title and like the lyrics and everything. So my basement that I recorded in flooded at one point.
Oh no.
Oh yeah, it was crazy. It wasn't, I didn't lose any gear or anything, but it was like all the rugs and stuff that I had laid down and had gotten totally soaked and ruined. So I had to take all those out, throw them away. And rugs are super expensive. So I'm on Facebook Marketplace, like, you know, doing that. That's Facebook Marketplace is it. It's the only place left for you to find like a deal on something. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to look all over the New Jersey area for area rugs. And I found some, I found one, and I went to go get it. And every time you go to get something on Facebook Marketplace, you know, it could be like your last day on earth because it could just be like a serial killer, and it's great. But it's worth it for the deal. You know, you got to do whatever it takes. But I go into this guy's house, I pull up, he's like, come on in, which already I'm like, God, why couldn't you just have it ready?
I go in,
it's like this older guy's house, like older man, and he's like, here's the rug, it's not even folded up. I'm like, dang it. I was like, man, I, you know, thanks. And he's telling me, by the way, you know, this rug, my wife, like, passed away on it, like, a week ago.
Whoa, what, like, the?
He's like, she had a heart attack, fell, it was right here, and I just felt like I had to tell whoever bought this. And at this point, I'm like, okay, he's going to kill me. Like, this is the end of my life. But at the same time, it's like this bittersweet, like, very sentimental moment, but also, like, I got to get out of here. But I told the guy, I was like, man, so I'm going to be using this, like, you know, for, like, a drum rug, essentially, in my basement. And I was like, you know, what was her name? And he was like, Lila. And I was like, all right, I'll find a way to work her name, like, into one of the songs, like, to pay respect. He's like, oh, that'd be great, man. And I was, like, kind of half serious when I told him that. But then I got home and, like, thought about it, and, like, it popped out. And I was like, it kind of sings well with this chorus idea that I have. And so that song is, like, not about that person, because obviously I don't know her. But the song title came fully from that. So I think it was just based on buying a rug from a deceased woman's widow or whatever husband.
That's sad but amazing. It made for a great track. I love it. Yeah. So. Yeah. Shout out, Violet.
Yeah, shout out.
Yep. So it seems like your writing process is always, like, very different. But I just wanted to know, like, what's your writing process like? I think one thing that, from just as a listener and a lover of your music, that I feel like is so signature Joe P is, like, specific, for example, like, a track like Lily, I think, your lyrical approach is very, like, literal, tongue in cheek. You kind of build this environment. Do you start with instrumental or lyrics first? And, like, what was the first song that you wrote for the record? What made it feel like, hey, we got an album here?
I think in most cases, I mean, in the best cases, I would say it's both things at the same time. So, like, a guitar on its own is not that inspiring to me as far as, like, a chord progression or, like, a riff even. Like, it's very hard to feel like anything you've done is impressive when you're, like, already a guitar player, you know? Whereas, like, if I play a piano, I could get much more easily inspired and, like, wow, that's pretty good, even though maybe it's not that good, but it'll trick me into thinking it is because I'm so not good at playing piano. But with guitar being my main instrument, I really need, like, a vocal melody to coexist at the same time with what I play to buy into it and think, this is good, this is catchy or whatever. So, and lyrically, I think it's like a lot of mumbling and a lot of just feeling around in the dark for something, and then a couple words pop out of you for no reason. Well, there's a reason, but you don't know what it is yet, and you're like, why do I keep saying that? Why do I keep,
you find, you know, the meaning later, yeah.
Yeah, there's something in you, in your body, and in your head, and whatever, that wants to write about this certain topic before you even sat down. Like, I don't ever sit down and go, I'm going to write a song about this. It's usually like I figure it out later that I wanted to do it. But yeah, so I let it kind of lead me down the road, and you try to get as much of that spark moment down and finished. And okay, you got the really good first verse, and now you run out of that gas and you're like, ah, all right, tomorrow's another day. And you got to just keep trying to finish that spark, and you got to keep going back to it as like, this means something because it came from somewhere else. You know, I sat down and I got this idea out of thin air. I didn't have any clue what this is beforehand. But now your job is to use it and actually, you have to actually get out in front of it and think a little and use your brain to actually finish the thing, or else it'll never get finished. You can't just keep waiting for magic moments to happen. You're lucky enough to get one. So that's usually the process, is get a lot of the sparks out and then work on them as if, you know, the answer's there, but you got to keep tricking and unlocking this puzzle until it's fully finished and based off of that one spark in order to be pure. And then as far as knowing when to get the album, you know, knowing I had an album, I think it was just, I had enough songs that I could say, you know, I could just, as far as making cuts, you know, it's like making a team or something. It's like, you don't want to have just the right amount of players. You want,
you kind of cut out a little bit, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so I was just saying that maybe it's on 2 hours of service. That's why, wherever I am in Alabama. Yeah. But no, I think I knew I had an album once I wrote more songs than I needed, so that I could actually kind of, you know, throw a few in the trash. Not in the trash, but, you know, be able to compare, you know, and go, oh, man, this song that I thought was the perfect 10th song actually wasn't as good as this 11th song that I wrote. So it gives you more confidence in the in the actual repertoire of what's now going to be in it. And it's not so much feeling like you just wrote enough songs to just get by. It's like you have things to prop other ones up. You got to have those, like, you know, those ugly ducklings to make the other ones seem like shinier and be like, okay, cool. This is definitely the album because the other ones are worse than these, you know?
Totally. I feel like once you let go from the creative process, you find the real treasures.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's been awesome chatting with you. I have like two more questions and then
sure.
This is going to be awesome. But all right, so we are located in Vermont, obviously, and you're going to be here soon. So what is the Ben and Jerry's flavor that would describe you and your band?
Oh my God, me and my band, that's typical. Ben and Jerry's, what is the best? I'm going to go with Cherry Garcia only because, like, it's such a strange flavor that, like, and just cherry in general, I would say, is such a strange thing to try to pull off. Because, like, some bites are good and some you're like, I didn't want that much cherry. Like, that was too weird and too chunky. I don't want to taste that and feel that. And I think that is the best way to describe it. It's just like every moment is like, I have no clue what anyone's going to say or do. And on stage, it's the same thing, but in the van, it's even crazier and up and down. Never down in a way that it's like, so-and-so hates this person and it's a weird vibe. But like, just like, I have no clue what anyone's going to say. And I love it. And I recognize it so much when we travel because it's like, I'm seeing us among other people. Like, we pull up to a venue and we go inside and it's like, the staff is looking at us like we have four heads and they're like... You guys are insane. And the joke of this tour has been, where did you find these guys? Because someone actually said that to me as we were packing up in Seattle. One of the sound guys, like the house sound guys that were there. They were just listening to how crazy, like, everyone was being. And the guy goes to me, where did you find these guys? They're insane. And so I kind of like that. I like that sometimes I feel like, oh, it's so normal. And then other times I'm realizing... this is kind of crazy. I don't know. Does this actually work? This is an absolute madness.
Hey, you got to have those zany moments. You can see it in the music. You can see it in the live show. It's awesome. So finally, to milk this conversation as much as we can for WREV and your Burlington fans, can we expect anything in 2025? I know you probably deserve you definitely deserve a long break after this tour. Are you working on anything new? Plug anything you want right now.
Yeah, I think, like, there might not be as many shows as far as that part of it. I don't think touring and stuff, I don't even consider that to be, like, when people come back from the tour and they're like, all right, I need a break. I'm actually
it's
the opposite. I feel like the tour part is, it's hard work in the sense of physically, you are exhausted from doing this and doing that. But as far as, like, the, you know, mentally, I would say it's so easy. You're not creating anything anymore. So to me, that part of your brain is like ready to rip. Like I get home and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to just sit down and write and make new stuff and get ready and make more stuff that makes it worth that people want to come to your shows again and do that all over again. So I think it's just going to be a lot of music creation and music making. Lots of new songs are kind of just like ready to go. I'm thinking it's going to be a lot of releasing music quickly, which is good. That's what I'm praying for anyway. And the shows, I don't know. I have this new idea of like, I just want to stay home and make a bunch of stuff and post on TikTok and make new songs and whatever. And then I live in the best area as far as like, you can drive to Boston in 4.5 hours and you could go to Florida if you really wanted to. In a day.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's like, why not just tour the East Coast every once in a while and do some weekend-type touring and do three shows and then go back home and keep working? Like, don't derail the whole creative process as much as, like, hey, we're going to go all the way to L.A. and go down through Arizona and go to New Mexico. And I think it's going to be more of just, like, let's make stuff. And then, you know, we're in such a unique area where we can... you know, drive through 10 states in a day, that it's like, why don't we do that?
That's so awesome. Whatever you make or whatever you do, we will be right there listening. Thank you so much for joining with me today, Joe. It's been awesome to meet you and talk to you. finally, go get your tickets for Higher Ground December 3rd. Listen to Garden State Vampire. Stream that. And this has been logging. Now we're logging off with DJ Logue. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thank you, man.
Logging off with DJ Logue. Yeah.
Didn't know what time it was. Then I met you. Oh, what a lovely time it was. How sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand. Warm like the month of May it was. And I say it was grand. Grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love and here it was. Shining out of your eyes, I'm wise, and I know what time it is now.
I was born to make you love. duck story.
Bum, 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 ba-dum, ba-dum. A duck walked up to a lemonade stand, and he said to the man running the stand, "Hey, bum, 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 got any grapes?" The man said, "No, we just sell lemonade, but it's cold and it's fresh and it's all homemade. Can I get you a glass?" The duck said, "I'll pass." Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle, till the very next day, bum, 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 ba-dum. When the duck walked up to the lemonade stand, and he said to the man running the stand, "Hey, bum, 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 got any grapes?" The man said, "No, like I said yesterday, we just sell lemonade, okay? Why not give it a try?" The duck said, "Goodbye." Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Till the very next day, bum, 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 ba-dum. When the duck walked up to the lemonade stand, and he said to the man running the stand, "Hey, bum, 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 got any grapes?" The man said, "Look, this is getting old. I mean, lemonade's all we've ever sold. Why not give it a go?" The duck said, "How about no?" Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Till the very next day, bum, 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 ba-dum. When the duck walked up to the lemonade stand, and he said to the man running the stand, "Hey, bum, 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 got any grapes?" The man said, "That's it. If you don't stay away, duck, I'll glue you to a tree and leave you there all day stuck. So don't get too close." The duck said, "Adios." Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Till the very next day, bum, 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 ba-dum. When the duck walked up to the lemonade stand, and he said to the man running the stand, "Hey, bum, 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 got any glue?" "What? Got any glue? No, why would I? Oh, then one more question for you. Got any grapes?" Bum, 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 bum. And the man just stopped. Then he started to smile. He started to laugh. He laughed for a while. He said, "Come on, duck, let's walk to the store. I'll buy you some grapes, so you won't have to ask anymore." So they walked to the store, and the man bought some grapes. He gave one to the duck, and the duck said, "No thanks. But you know what sounds good? It would make my day. Do you think this store? Do you think this store? Do you think this store has any lemonade?"